Alrighty, Shabbat Shalom. And Shabbat Shalom to all those listening with us today. The message I have today is called, Have You Left Your First Love? Have you left your first love? And, you know, it's a very strange time that we're living in now because as Yahweh's Spirit is being more poured out, in one way, we're becoming more mature, we're becoming more filled with Yahweh's Spirit, we're seeing more miracles, and I believe if you're truly seeking Yahweh, you're getting a closer relationship with Him. On the other end, as we go through the baptism of fire, many brethren are going through severe trials and sicknesses and suffering and even death and different things that are happening. So it's a real dichotomy as we go through this, and many of those things we're going through, you know, as I talked about with the baptism of fire, actually help us to purify ourselves. But for some that maybe have allowed some of the trials and some of the things with COVID and whatnot to affect them, we have to look at it. Are some of the brethren maybe leaving their first love? So let's go to Revelation 2. We know there's seven congregations in the end time. My book goes over this. The gates of hell shall not prevail against them. And we talk a lot about the congregation of Laodicea and the congregation of Philadelphia because they're Laodicea is the primary congregation in the world today, and Philadelphia is the one that everybody wants to be part of. But today I want to go over the message to the congregation of Ephesus, and it's in Revelation 2 and verse 1, to the messenger of the congregation of Ephesus, right? These things says he who holds all things and the seven stars in his right hand, he walking in the midst of the seven golden menorahs, right? And each menorah is representative of the congregation. And he says, I know your works and your labor and your patience and that you cannot bear evil ones. And you tried those pretending to be apostles and are not, and you found them to be liars. So remember, this is these seven congregations are both historical in nature and also end time. So here it is. In historical, this is the first congregation. These are the apostles and the ones in the first century, right? That he's saying that a lot of them were martyred and he sees their patience and they tried evil ones, the ones pretending to be apostles, Simon Magus, and found them to be liars. And you have patience and have borne burdens on account of my name and you have not wearied. So we could see this in a lot of the stories we see in Acts and other parts of the New Testament. But then it's kind of scary what he says next. He says, nevertheless, I have something against you. Why? What happened with this congregation? Because you left your first love. So here it was. These were the ones that were with Yeshua. Many of them actually saw him and walked with him on the earth. These were the ones that were that initial congregation. And yet at the same time, they went through a lot of suffering, a lot of things. And what happened? These people also thought, I go over this in my book, that Yeshua was returning in the first century. They thought that there'd be another 40 years in the wilderness, and by 70 AD, Yeshua would come. And by the mid-60s, when that didn't happen, there was not only a falling away, but a really, probably one of the worst times to be in the congregation over the last 2,000 years, because there was a lot of distress and a lot of people giving up. And this is what happened, like he said, they lost their first love. He says, then remember from where you have fallen and repent and do the first works. And if not, I am coming to you quickly and I will remove your menorah from its place unless you repent. And it's a scary thing to have your menorah removed because that means you're not a first fruit anymore. So even though this is written to the Ephesus congregation and there are people that have the Ephesus spirit today, I think all of us can learn from this because in the times we're living in, and like Yeshua said when he was being crucified, remember when the women were weeping for him and he said, don't weep for me, weep for you and your children. He said, for if you do this when the tree is green, what will you do when it's dried up? And today we look in the world, right? The tree is still green. People still have food to eat. We still have some freedoms. Even though with COVID it was getting to the point in some areas like where we live, you couldn't go to supermarkets, the mark of the beast still wasn't totally implemented. But that time is coming. And if we are getting discouraged and losing focus now, when the tree is still green, what will we do when it's dried up? What will we do when the mark actually comes? Because it's not coming for just a few days or a few weeks or even 1 year. You're talking about 3.5 long years of going through suffering, martyrism, and all the other things that are going to be happening at that time with the plagues of Yahweh also on the world. So I think it's a really important message. And to look and say, if this could happen to the original congregation, the original apostles, then certainly it could happen to us. I want to go to Mark 4, because what I really want to talk about most of the time is how this can happen and how you can make sure it doesn't happen, or if it is happening in your life, how you can change. So let's go to Mark 4. And the parable of the sower and the seed, because this basically tells all the different of the seven congregations, pretty much, maybe not Smyrna, who is the martyred congregation, but the other ones we see here. Starting in verse 9 of Mark 4, it says, "And he, Yeshua, said to them, 'The one having ears to hear, let him hear.'" So that's another thing, as we're Yahweh is pouring his spirit out more in these end times, and some are not getting that spirit. Some are drifting on one end of, you know, the horizon, like it talks about with Lazarus and the rich man, the gulf. There's a great gulf between. And that gulf that might have been smaller 5 or 10 years ago is really widening now. And that's why I love to read the scriptures, "Him that has ears to hear, let him hear." Because it's the ones that you have to have ears to hear. If not, they're just words on paper that are going back and forth, but they're not going to go to your heart, and the Holy Spirit is not going to convict you through them. And this is what he says. He says, "When he was alone, those around him with the 12 asked him as to the parable. And he said to them, 'To you it has been given to know the mystery of the kingdom of Yahweh,'" right? It's given to the ones, the first fruits. "But to these, those outside, all things are being given in parables, that seeing they may see and not perceive, in hearing they may hear and not understand, lest they should be converted and the sins be forgiven them.' And he said to them, 'Do you not know this parable? And how will you know all parables?'" Right? So basically all the parables, because everything we're talking about in the new covenant is about bearing fruit, right? And being an ambassador for Yahweh. And it all comes down to the parable of the sower and the seed, because this is goes back to, like we said, it parallels Adam in the book of Genesis, and the same way of bearing fruit in the garden. So the first thing he says is the sower sows the word. So the seed is the word of Yahweh. We know that. "And these are those by the wayside where the word is sown. And when they hear, Satan comes at once and takes away the word having been sown in their heart." And I say this many times with brethren. Don't think just because you came to a feast or you came to a meeting, an open meeting, and you met somebody there, that they're a brother or a sister or a converted person. Because as we know in the end time, at least 50%, the parable of the wheat and the tares, at least 50% of the people that are sitting in the chairs are wheat and 50% are tares. So don't be surprised, you know, when all of a sudden, you know, one day somebody's there and one day they're not, because that's the days we're living in. It's amazing, you know, just recently we were even looking at some old feast pictures, and it's like, wow, you look at these feast pictures through the years and you can't believe how many people that have actually come to Jerusalem, they've come to Israel, some of them even to the Bible school, and have fallen away. And I don't mean just falling away. Some of them not only just going back to the world, some of them have left and gone to Judaism, some of them even to Islam. I mean, people have gotten into all kinds of trouble with their life. So, and these are the ones. These are the ones where the word is sown, right, by the wayside. But there's no root at all. You don't know why. Sometimes, why is somebody there at a meeting? You know, why is somebody there at a feast? It just could be curiosity. It could be for any reason. It could be a prophecy. It could be now, because so many things that I said in the last couple of years are coming to pass, that somebody just is coming to see, because they're just believing for the minute. But then once that minute ends, they're right back to where they were again, right? "And likewise, those are the ones having been sown in the rocky places, who when they hear the word, they immediately receive it with joy. But they have no roots in themselves. Rather, of a short time when they were in affliction happens or persecutions because of the word, they quickly get offended. So I see this sometimes with people writing me, sometimes even for 2 or 3 years, and asking for baptism, and writing letters and feeling like, oh, I am so happy I came to the truth. And then they disappear as quick as they come. A lot of times after the baptism, you just never hear from them again. You know, they so much want that, thinking that that baptism is some kind of magic pill, that they're just going to be baptized and change overnight, and then they're going to, and it doesn't work that way, as we know. We know that, and I tell people this after baptism, you're 99% carnal and 1% spiritual, but that can change very quickly if you're surrendering to the Holy Spirit. We just had the last Bible school, 12 people get baptized, and I think more than ever when I did baptism, seeing immediate things of people and the Holy Spirit working with them. So it can happen, but it doesn't just happen. You have to do something. You have to change. You have to surrender to that Spirit if you're going to have. And if not, it's this. And there's many people in the end time, in the Laodicean era, that this is what it is. There's no root, right? And what do you need a root for? Because if you don't have a root, what happens? The sun comes right away and withers it. You have to have a root. You have to have a root there, or there'll be nothing to it. And then it's like it never happened. They just go on to the next thing. And those that were sown in the thorny place are those who hear the word, and the cares of the world and the deception of riches and the rest of others' lusts enter in and choke the word, and it becomes without fruit. So these are the majority of people today, and this is what we saw with Adam, right, in Genesis, the thorns and the thistles. Where now, because of Adam's sin, there wasn't just going to be fruit being born from nothing. And I always am amazed at this because I've been a gardener my whole life. I was in business for 15 years doing gardening. I love doing gardening. And yet at the same time, you know how hard it is to put a plant in the ground and actually get fruit from it? You have to get that dirt ready. You have to fertilize it. And then after it's in the ground, you got to water it every day. You got to weed it. You got to make sure that it gets all the nutrients. And you got to wait months for it to come up. And yet at the same rate, you know, you can go away for a month or two and come back, and there's weeds everywhere. You don't plant the weeds. You don't do nothing to the weeds. You don't fertilize. They just come up. And they're everywhere because that's the world we're living in. We're living in a world of weeds. It's Satan's society, right? But that wasn't the way it was in the Garden of Eden. But this is what happens. People, not that they have no root to them, they have some root to them, but there's so many cares in life. And face it, we have never lived in such an unnormal time as we are today. And it's not just unnormal because of TV and internet and people sitting 8 hours a day behind a computer screen, sitting in a chair. Nobody's ever done that in the history of man. That makes it unnormal enough, right? In airplanes and cars and all the things. But the other thing is, we're living in a world where many brethren are come to faith, but their families don't. So you hardly ever see somebody that is a third or fourth generation, everybody's in the truth. So even if there's a family, right, that the mother and father are in the faith and their kids are in the faith, right, and maybe even they have a couple grandchildren, which is great. But then their parents aren't in the faith, you know, or maybe some of the kids go away. So we're living in a world where 99% of us, we have our relatives and maybe, you know, close friends of the family that aren't converted. And it affects your life. And especially now, look at COVID. Wow. Tell me that wasn't a dividing line with families and everybody, you know, and it's only going to get worse when the mark of the beast comes. So this is, I think, a major way where people leave their first love, because they get caught up with unconverted people and other people. Could be at work, people you're working with that are unconverted, right? Could be anybody. But you can't let unconverted people take away your joy in your first love, no matter who they are, you know, even if it's family members and whatever. You have to keep perspective. And I always say this, whatever you focus on becomes most real to you. And unless your focus is on the kingdom of Yahweh, and that's why I say it's not only a reality, it's a mentality. You got to live in that mentality every day of your life. And that's why you got to be studying every day. You got to be praying. And if I get into reasons why people lose their first love, we'll see this. But this is, I think, one of the hardest things is this one here. the cares of life and like I said, dealing with unconverted people. And like I said, if they're family members, we love them. And it makes it very, very difficult, you know, in those kind of situations. And then these are on the good ground that hear and they welcome the word and bring forth fruit 130, 160, 100, right? We're rewarded according to our fruit. We're not a bunch of rubber pencils. Yahweh is not communistic. Everyone doesn't get the same reward. And the more fruit you bear, the more reward you get for eternity. So that should keep us in joy. That should keep us in zeal. That should keep us excited and working for Yahweh every day. So this parable, the sower and the seed, I think really comes down to it when you're talking about have you left your first love. Because if you're not in that last category there, you know, the category of the first fruits, it's going to be tough. And even, believe me, as somebody that's been a pastor now for 27, 28 years and seeing people fall away, people you baptize, people you're friends with, it's hard. But you can't let it take away your joy because, unfortunately, like I said, there's a lot of people out there that are tares, they're not wheat. There's a lot of people out there that are on the rocky places and that are have their life taken in thorns and thistles. And if it wasn't that way, Yeshua wouldn't have wrote it. He's writing it that way. And what does he say? He talks about the narrow road, right? So most of the people are not first fruits. He says the road is constricted and narrow and few will find it. So we have to keep that perspective. And in the world of Satan we're living in, wow, you got to keep your focus. You got to keep your focus and you got to keep your relationship with Yahweh on par. Because if it's not, you're going to wind up being one of these people. So let me go into ways now that you could know, that you could ask yourself if you are losing or if you've lost or you've left your first love. First of all, you're not getting messages out of the sermons like you used to. So one of the things that almost all new people, when they're coming into the faith, at least in our congregation, they come through because they're hearing the messages online. And when they're writing to me, right, or they're meeting, whether it's a feast or a meeting or whatever, they're so excited. And sometimes they'll tell me, I listened to your messages all week in the car. And I, you know, and I've heard every message you had and I download all the messages. And because it's not messages of me, these are messages from Yahweh's Spirit. And you know what? There's nowhere else on earth you can go to get these messages. Because in the world, in Christianity, you're not going to hear these type of messages. Those who have eyes, you know, ears to hear, you know, praise Yahweh for that, right? So this is it. And this is everybody. From me all the way down, all of us, the reason why we're first fruit and the reason why we're here is because of the messages. Because of the, you know, what we're getting out of the messages and what we're hearing and what Yahweh is teaching us in the lessons, the 25 lessons online and the remnants walks and just devouring anything that we could get from Yahweh. And if you're not getting anything out of the messages anymore, if you're not, if Yahweh isn't speaking to you out of these messages and you're not getting anything in your heart and anything to change, that's a first telltale sign that you're losing your first love. Because those messages should be like water in a desert to us. And I know most brethren every week listen to a message. I know we do. I don't give a message every week. And when I'm not giving a message, I'm listening to the messages from the website, just like everybody else is. So they're really, really important. So if you're not getting things out of the sermons like you used to, it's the first thing you have to question to yourself. Are you losing your first love? Next is your prayer and your study life is lacking, right? Your prayer and your study life is lacking. And in 1 Samuel 28 and verse 6, 1 Samuel 28 and verse 6, very scary scripture when King Saul, right, was getting in more trouble than he wanted to know, right? And he winds up going after this to the witch, Endor. But it says, Saul asked of Yahweh, but Yahweh did not answer him, neither by dreams or by Urim or by prophets. Yahweh did not answer him. And I can tell you something, in my almost 40 years of my walk, not just as an elder, but from the time I started coming into the faith, I heard the voice of Yahweh. And most of the time, I'd say 90% of the time, the way I hear Yahweh's voice is in his word. you're praying about something, you're asking for something, you open up the word, and Yahweh talks to you. So his word is on levels. It's not only what it was written for, right? Like you could be reading something in the word of Yahweh that Saul said to King David, but you could be asking Yahweh a question and he gives you that scripture for you that day. So if your prayer and your study life is lacking and you're not hearing Yahweh's voice in your life, then you really have to question, you know, if you've lost your first love. Your time on the internet. If your time on the internet is more than your time in prayer and study, you know, in meditation to Yahweh, then you have a problem there. Because, like we said, your priorities are what you get done. And for some people, that's their work is the internet. I understand it, you know, that there's a certain amount of time people have to be on the internet for certain things. But if you're just on the internet for leisure time and doing more things on the internet than your prayer, your study, your meditation, then you really have to ask. And you know something? Yahweh is a real being. He's got a heart. The Bible tells us he laughs. It tells us he cries. It tells us he has zeal. It tells us he gets angry. Yahweh is a real being because we couldn't have these emotions if Yahweh didn't have them. He gives us the same emotions as he has. And he's not stupid. You know, Yahweh is not stupid. Maybe like with this one world government, they think that we're stupid, right? When it comes to COVID or it comes to the false election and all these other things going on, they might think people are stupid and maybe some are, you know, but Yahweh's not stupid. And at the end of the day, your priorities are what you get done. And if you're not seeking him, if you're not studying it, if you're not getting up every day with joy in your heart, and you just can't wait to open up that Bible and hear Yahweh's living word for you that day, because it's not just pages on a book. You know, I've read the Bible at least 100 times, at least, probably more. And every time I read it, I see something I didn't see before. Like I said, there's a message there that Yahweh gives for that day. And that's the way that you hear his voice. There are times I've heard audible voices. You know, there are times that Yahweh's given me, you know, dreams and visions. But those are rare. Those don't come every day. Those are a few times in your life, maybe, if even it happens. You don't have to have that. You know, it's not a prerequisite that you have to have a dream or a vision from Yahweh. But it is a prerequisite that you need to be in his word. You need to hear him speaking to you from his word. And that's the way you know he's alive. And I'll tell you something. To me, that was the most exciting thing coming to truth. Because growing up as a Catholic, everything was ritual. Absolutely everything was ritual. And you just go to that mass every week. And depending on the priest that was there, you know, for that week, you could basically know exactly what was going to happen. And everything, you could time it down to the minute, you know. And there was nothing that was new under the sun, you could say that much. And the biggest thing that just got me so excited was to find out that Yahweh was real. To find out that he is really alive, that it's not canned prayers that you just say just for the sake of it to feel good about yourself, you know, going around a rosary bead. But that Yahweh is real and he just wants you to talk to him like a dad. And he'll hear you and he'll listen to you and he'll answer you. And it's like to have him in your life and have a real relationship with him. To me, it was the most exciting thing in my life. And every year that I go on as a believer, my relationship with him only gets deeper and it only gets stronger. So it doesn't mean that, you know, I get discouraged as much as everybody else does in the kind of world we live in, but that's what keeps me going. What keeps me going is my relationship with the one who created me and knowing that I'm going to have a relationship with him forever. And that's got to be there. So the next thing is that you know you're losing your first love if you have no zeal for Yahweh's work. You know, Yahweh's end time work from Israel that we've been blessed to be part of. And the kingdom of Yahweh, that it doesn't excite us. You know, so I say this, how much a person is converted is by how much they're involved in the work of Yahweh. And there's, you know, there's a lot of really good believers out there that are good people that have no ministry. You know, that I don't know, like sometimes people, I meet them and they thank me and they say, oh, I want to thank you for what you're doing. And I say, I'm not doing anything that you shouldn't be doing. You know, maybe not everyone's going to give a sermon and maybe not everybody's you know, is because they're not all the leader of the congregation. But everything I'm doing for the congregation, because it's Yeshua's congregation, all of us should be doing it. It's not a one-man band. We should all be doing something. We should all, and it could be anything from ministries of encouragement to writing little letters to people of encouragement. It could be, you know, putting out flyers off the website. You know, all of us should be doing to some form or another the Matthew 24 program, because Yahweh's work isn't finished yet. And we're in the last part of it. This is it. The only thing he's waiting for to bring his wrath and then his kingdom is for us to finish that last witness. And every one of us should be a part of that. Every one of us in our local area and helping through. Now, people paying their tithes and helping, that's a great way. That helps because, you know, we couldn't be doing this without it. But all of us should be doing some kind of local ministry also. Because everything, it's the same way in your life. Your spiritual life starts with yourself. You have to have yourself strong spiritually. And then next it's to your family. But you can't make your family strong if you're not strong. And then it goes out to the congregation. And then it goes to the world. So that's with everybody. So you have to start with yourself. And you have to make sure you have zeal. You know, are you praying every day for Yahweh's work? Are you praying for the mission trips? Because even now, you know, I haven't taken so many mission trips the last couple of years because of COVID. But you know what? We have a lot of local ministry going on in Africa, in Asia, you know, just all over the place. Central America, you know, I mean, you name it. We have pretty much all over the world that we still have people going out and doing local missions. And I could say in the last couple of years during COVID, our congregation has grown more than I think it ever has, because of those local elders that are going out and they're doing their job. So we need to have zeal for Yahweh's work. And if you don't have zeal, if you're just half-hearted, you know what that makes you? It makes you not only an Ephesus, losing your first love, but a Laodicea. Revelation 3. Because one goes hand in hand. Once you lose your first love and you have no more zeal anymore for Yahweh, his Bible, his work, or anything dealing with him, you'll most certainly become a Laodicean pretty quickly, because then everything just becomes arbitrary to you. Revelation 3 and verse 14 says, "To the messenger of the congregation of Laodicea write, these things says the Amen, the faithful and true witness, the head of the creation of Elohim. I know your works, that you are neither cold nor hot. I would that you were cold or hot." Right? Why? Because cold and hot are good. When it's a really, really hot day, when it's 50 degrees Celsius, 120 degrees out there Fahrenheit, and you're sweating like anything, you want a nice cold glass of water. And when it's really cold and it's the winter and you're going to take a shower, you want some hot water there, right? Or hot tea. But nobody wants lukewarm. Because you know the only thing that lukewarm water is good for? Inducing vomiting. That's about it. So nobody wants lukewarm. And that's what it is. You know? Neutrality is of the devil. And once you lose your first love for Yahweh, you have no zeal anymore, and you become neutral in so many things. And you could see that in your daily life. What are you watching? What books are you reading? You know, what your friendships with people. Is everything toward the kingdom? Is everything toward Yahweh? Is it toward the world? He says, "I know your work." Okay. "So because you are lukewarm, neither cold nor hot, I'm about to vomit you out of my mouth." That's what I said. That's the only thing it's good for. "And because you say, I am rich and I am made rich and I have need of nothing, and do not know that you are miserable and a wanderer and poor and blind and naked." They have no covering. And that's another thing. Once you lose your first love, you fall outside of judicial order. You start just doing things on your own. You start making your own decisions. You stop coming to counseling from Yahweh's elders. And it's a slope that goes long and quick, but you don't want to go down it. You really don't want to go down there. So like I said, neutrality is of the devil. You have to stand in the truth. So very easily, when you start to lose your first love, the next thing is you become Laodicean minded. Okay, next, the next thing, how do you know you're losing your first love? That things that used to excite you, like coming to the Sabbath or going to the feast, now they become a burden. And I remember when we first left America and we were in Israel. And we would stay part of the year in Israel and then we'd stay part of the year somewhere else. And I remember that because we had no money at that time, and I told the story many times, we used to find money in the street and we'd put it in a cup. You know, we would collect cans, you know, aluminum cans and bottles we'd be getting. You know, we'd be finding money in the supermarkets on the floor. I mean, but what we would do is everything we were finding was only to get money to go back to Israel for the feast again. And that was it. Once we had that money, we were so excited. And I'll tell you something. I think what I love more than anything in my life, and whether it's the feast or it's the Bible school, we just had an awesome Bible school. 75% of the people there were brand new. And it really gets me jazzed because when people are new, they're zealous and they're excited. And the saddest thing for me is when I see people that have been around maybe for 5 or 10 years and they ask a question like, well, Elder Don, don't you get bored from going to the same biblical places over and over again? It's like, bored? Are you kidding? Are you kidding? I thank the people. Every time we're on a pilgrimage, I thank the people because I say, if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be over here at Capernaum, or I wouldn't be over here at Tel Dan, or now in the wilderness, right? It's because those people are there that makes Yahweh have me there. So I love it, and I appreciate every single day and every single time because Yahweh teaches something new every time. So if things like either coming to the Sabbath or coming to the feast, which you used to be so excited you couldn't wait to do, now they become a burden, you know you lost your first love. Next, if you're more interested and focused on worldly things and your job and worldly finances than your ministry, right? Because in the beginning, when you first came to the truth, right, and you were falling in love with Yahweh and Yeshua and His Word, man, you didn't care. You'd give everything. You'd sacrifice everything. It didn't matter what it was because you got the truth, and the truth is worth more than anything, right? Like it talks about in Matthew 13, you know, the kingdom of Yahweh is like a man who found a pearl of great price in a field, and he gave everything he had to buy that field for that price. And that's the way it was when you were first called and you had your first love. But then after a while, right, what starts to happen, you start thinking about all the money maybe you spent, you know, to come to a feast, or all the money you spent on tithe or whatever it is. And you start to get more worried and more interested in your worldly finances than in your ministry, right? And 1 John 2 and verse 15, you know, do not love the world, nor the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. Why? Because all that is in the world, not some that is in the world, not part that is in the world, but all that is in the world, all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world is passing away in its lusts, but the one doing the will of Yahweh abides forever. Well, and can we see that? Can we see that the world is passing away, right? You know, for a while, it used to frustrate me because I saw this for the last 40 years. But for many people that were living in that facade and just thinking that the world was going to go on that way forever, and it was frustrating sometimes because they couldn't see when you would tell them what's going to happen. And they're like, it'll never happen. But now, with COVID and all these things going on, a lot of people see we're never going back to that old world. Praise Yahweh. We're on the way to the kingdom of Yahweh, and that road has just got a little bit more narrow. But for the other people that keep looking back, like Lot's wife, right? Why does he say don't look back? Because what are they looking back to? They're looking back to that world that was there 2, 3, 4 years ago. And don't kid yourself. Don't kid yourself just because temporarily some of these COVID restrictions have been taken away, because they're coming back real quick. And I'm telling you, when we get outside on the other side of the Shemitah, this world is not going to look the same way it does today. You know, we already know. They already told us what they're doing, what they're planning. So don't plan on that happening. But the things of the world, they're all from Satan. And if you're more focused on worldly things and less for the love of Yahweh, then you're losing your first love. Next is, do you look more at the financial aspect of things such as tithing and going to the feast and the spiritual. Well, I kind of talked about that already, so I won't mention that again. And the last point, that you're simply not as involved in the work of Yahweh as you were before. I kind of went over this point too, but you need to be involved in the work. And not just praying for the work, not just tithing, but you need to have a ministry. You need to be part of it. Because remember, like I said, you're one out of like 5 million people there in the world. If there's 5 million people, you're the one that Yahweh called, and he didn't call you just to do what you were doing for the all your life before that. He called you to be a part of this ministry. He called you to have a ministry. He called you to be bearing fruit for his kingdom. And he called you to be, you know, bringing more children to salvation. 1 Corinthians 10. Starting in verse 1. 1 Corinthians 10:1. He says, I do not want you to be ignorant, brothers, that our fathers were all under the cloud and all passed through the sea. And all were baptized to Moses in the cloud and in the sea. And all ate the same spiritual food. And all drank the same spiritual drink. For they drank the spiritual rock following. And that rock was Messiah. Yet Elohim was not pleased with most of them, for they were scattered in the deserted place, right? The wilderness is the only road to the promised land, but the wilderness is not the promised land. We don't want to end up just in the wilderness. We want to get in the wilderness. We want to learn in the wilderness. We want to be purified in the wilderness, but we want to get out of the wilderness in the end and get to the promised land, right? For Elohim was not pleased with most of them, for they were scattered in the deserted place. But these things became examples for us so that we may not be lusting after evil as indeed some of them did. And I think this is what happens, that when you lose your first love, right, you don't go back to where you were right before you got converted. You go way worse. It's worse than it was before, because now you're actually blaspheming the spirit of Yahweh, and your life becomes worse than what it was. And you know what starts to happen? If you're not seeing this, and you're not catching it, and you're not repenting, and you're not changing, and this is why we're commanded to do this at least every Passover. So none of us should go more than a year falling into this state, because Passover should pull us out. But if you have, and you've just went through a few Passovers that you just went through the motions, you know, and then you get to the point where you're almost completely quenched Yahweh's spirit, the next thing is that you start to murmur, like it says, verse 10, neither should you murmur, as also some of them murmur, and perish by the hand of the destroyer. And all these things happen to those as examples, and as it was written, for our warning until the end of the world has come. So, whereas before, you know, we looked at things with the spirit of Yahweh, and we were positive, and even when negative things happened in our life, we saw that it wasn't really negative. They were challenges that helped us to grow and helped us to learn. Once you lose your first love for Yahweh and you start falling back, a lot of times someone is also getting guilty because deep down they know it. And what they start to do, they start to murmur. It usually starts with the leadership. You know, they got to blame somebody, so they blame. They want to blame their elder. They want to blame whatever. And then it just gets worse. So we want to make sure that we're not doing that. So if you've gotten into a spirit of murmuring, and a spirit of making excuses and complaining, these are all the things now where you could see you're either losing your first love or you lost your first love. And if any of these things that I've mentioned here, if any of them you've even remotely have fallen into them, then you got to get out of there quick. Because like I said, what happens is if you don't get out of this quick and get your first love back, wow. It'll be a road that there'll be no getting back from. You know, it's like I said during the sermon when I said, you know, has the cloud moved? The only way you could stay safe is not to leave the camp. Because when the cloud moves, the whole camp moves. And if the cloud moved and you didn't move, and you're not in the camp anymore and you're out on your own, how do you find it? How on earth do you ever find it again? You know, you might, by a miracle, but it won't be easy. But you take that risk of never finding it. And it's the same way here, that if you don't catch yourself, You know, when you're falling into one of these things here and you don't get back online and you don't get your prayer life back and your study life back and you don't get your focus back with Yahweh, and you don't get your appreciation back for everything He's doing in your life, well, you'll get to the point of no return. You'll get to the point where it won't even matter anymore. And that's why I say in the end, the lake of fire, it's not a punishment. It's actually, it's the last act of a loving father of somebody who's chosen the way of the world over Yahweh's way. And Yahweh knows they're never going to be happy for eternity because they've chosen the way of the world, the way of lust, the way of greed, the way of pride, instead of His way of outgoing concern and forgiveness and mercy. And it's a last act of love to just make that person cease to exist. You know, it's like somebody that's in the hospital is just suffering, suffering, and suffering. And it's like you're taking them off that life support so that they can just not have to suffer anymore. Luke 9 and verse 57. Luke 9 and verse 57. Because you want to know something, like I said, this isn't my ministry. This isn't my job. This is all of our job. Yahweh has called each of us as a part of this body. And in the body, everybody is a part of that body. Everybody has a place. Everybody has a function. And we have to function together to be one body. And that's what community is all about. That's why living in community, where we learn this, because everybody's got a function or, you know, everybody's going to suffer. So Luke 9 and verse 57, it says, "And it happened as they were going in the way, one said to him, to Yeshua, 'I will follow you everywhere you go, Master.' And Yeshua said to him, 'The foxes have holes and the birds of the heaven have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere he may lay his head.'" Right? It's not like these ministries where they're getting millions of dollars. You know, a lot of times you might not even have money for a place to sleep. "And he said to another, 'Follow me.' And he said, 'Master, allow me to go first to bury my father.'" Right? And it's not that the father died and he was saying, "Give me 2 days to go to the funeral," because that's part of honoring your mother and father, is giving them a proper funeral. But what he's saying is, when he's saying, "Let me go bury my father," he's saying, "My father is older, and let me go out and stay with my father and take care of him for whatever, many years. And then once he's gone, then I'll come and follow you." And look what Yeshua said. "But Yeshua said to him, 'Leave the dead to bury their dead. But going out, you announce the kingdom of Yahweh.'" And I'll tell you something. As somebody that has a father that's getting older, this is hard. And this is like, you would almost think, like, if Yeshua didn't say this, you would think that's insensitive to say that to somebody. But, you know, there's nobody that had more mercy and there's nobody that had more empathy and pity than Yeshua. But what he's saying is just the truth of the matter, right? When you're having unconverted relatives, we care for them and we want to help where we can. But our first vocation is the kingdom of Yahweh, you know, and the fact, like I always say, the fact that I love Yahweh more doesn't mean I love my family less. And I'll help my family. I'll try to help them wherever I can, particularly my dad. But at the same rate, I know that I can't stop working for the kingdom of Yahweh because of that. And another said, "I will follow you, Master, but first allow me to take leave of those in my house." And look what Yeshua said. Yeshua said to him, "No man places his hand upon the handle of a plow and looks backward and it's useful for the kingdom of Yahweh." Why? Because if you're on a plow, right, and you're looking back, what's going to happen? That ox is going to be going in every direction, and you're not going to be able to plow. So he says, if you put your hand to that plow, if, and this is why baptism, I say, we don't push anybody into baptism. And if somebody is waiting and they're not sure, then you know what? Then they haven't appreciated the gift that Yahweh has for them. Because I know when I got to the point that I knew and I understood this, all I had to do was make sure it was true. There was nothing that could have stopped me from being baptized. I thought about it day and night, and I was going to get baptized, and there was nothing that was going to stop me because I knew I could die. I could wind up dying tomorrow or the next day, and then I won't be a first fruit. And I wanted that baptism. And when you do that, because remember, it's about a covenant relationship, and that's between two parties. So your part is dying to the flesh, and Yahweh's part is giving you His Spirit. But each party in a covenant relationship has something to perform. So it's not just that Yahweh gives you a Spirit, and Yahweh does everything. That's the false religion of Christianity. No, it's that you have a lot to do in your covenant relationship. And like he says, The day you're baptized is the first day of eternity, but you know what? That's only the first day of a lot of work to do in this life. Because you have committed now to be a servant of Yahweh and an ambassador of Yahweh. And that's His work. And if you put your hand to that plow and now you're looking back, and that's why Lot's wife isn't just looking back at, oh, her good life, which she's losing. She's looking back because she's not looking forward. She's not seeing what her life is going to be for the kingdom of Yahweh once they leave over there in Sodom. She's looking back to it, right? And once you look back, no man is fit for the kingdom of Yahweh, because you can't do work for Yahweh when you're looking back to what's behind. You got to look forward. And now we're entering a new age. We're entering the wilderness. And I think that's why some people won't go in the wilderness. I believe it's because not that they left their first love or they lost their first love. I believe they never had it. I believe there's a lot of people out there that basically got baptized looking for that magic pill. And you know what? They only got wet. They only got wet because they never repented of their sins. They never embraced that this is real. They never embraced their ambassadorship, right? And I know at the Bible school, the biggest thing we teach is on being an ambassador to Yahweh. Because the majority of brethren, not the majority, but some brethren, I don't think have ever even thought about it, on what it means to be an ambassador, have never planned it, or never, and like I say, when you're an ambassador of Yahweh, you are always in state, which means you're an ambassador day and night. It's not a day job. It's not a 9-to-5. It's not something you're leaving at 5 o'clock and then going somewhere else and doing something else. You are an ambassador of Yahweh 24/7. And if you've never thought about that and you have no plan as an ambassador, you have no ministry as an ambassador, you know what? Then you're not an ambassador. You can't put your hand to the plow and look back. This is the time now we're going into. We're going into the last hurdle. And there's a job for us to do now. And we have to call those last people now before Yahweh brings His wrath on a world that most people ain't going to listen. But you know what? Like the Bible says, when there's 100 sheep and one goes, you leave the 99 and go get the one. Every life is important to Yahweh. So we're not looking for big numbers in the end. What we're looking for each life that Yahweh has. And we want to make sure that we internalize these things. Luke 10 and verse 22. He says, all things were delivered to me by my Father, and no one knows who the Son is except the Father, and who the Father is except the Son, and he whom the Son may desire to reveal him. And having turned to the disciples alone, he said, blessed are the eyes seeing what you see. For I say to you that many prophets and kings desired to see what you see and did not see, and hear what you hear and did not hear. And you want to know something? This is so true, that the prophets in the old time, Jeremiah and Isaiah and Ezekiel, you know what their prophecy say in Daniel? I prophesied, but I knew not what I saw. They actually, the words of Yahweh spoke through them, and they didn't even know what they were seeing. And they wished that they could see the Bible from the way we see it today. Even the apostles, right? The early apostles, they were the early congregation, but they didn't have a New Testament. The New Testament came late first century, early second century. At best, some of them may have had some letters from maybe Paul or letters from Peter or whatever, or maybe one of the good news messages. But they didn't have what we have. We are so blessed. We are so blessed that we're getting to see things from the end of the book now. And even like the book of Daniel being opened, the book of Revelation being opened, of us seeing so many of these prophecies being fulfilled, just what we've seen in the last 7 years, right? And this last 7 year cycle is unbelievable. And now we're going into the last stretch. But now it's not time to quit. Now it's not time to lose that zeal and that first love. Now it's that time to build it up. And like he says, the kings and prophets and these people, they would have given their right arm to know what we know. And you got to appreciate it. You have to have that level of appreciation every single day of your life. To be an ambassador of Yahweh, it's got to be the highest priority in your life. And like I said, how do you know if it is? Because the priority is what you get done. It's that simple. It's not excuses. Yahweh is not Elohim of excuses. You don't see Him through the Bible making excuses. You see him as Elohim of performance. And that's the way he wants us to be. He doesn't want to hear excuses. Because you know what happens when people make excuses? They get replaced. Let's go to 1 Kings 18. 1 Kings 18. Because you know something? Even some of the mightiest men of Yahweh. And we're going to see here with Eliyahu, right? Eliyahu was, it says, the greatest prophet of Israel, who beat 450 priests of Baal, and how zealous he was doing it. And unfortunately, because Eliyahu lost his first love, look what happened. 1 Kings 18 and verse 36. And it happened at the offering of the sacrifice that Eliyahu the prophet came near and said, O Yahweh, the Elohim of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, let it be known today that you are Elohim in Israel, and I am your servant, that by your word I have done all these things. Answer me, O Yahweh, answer me, and this people shall know that you are Yahweh Elohim, and you shall turn their hearts back again, right? What does Eliyahu does? Turn the hearts, and this is when he's fighting the priests of Baal. And fire fell from Yahweh and consumed the burnt offering and the wood and the stones and the dust and the water that was in the trench. It licked it up. And all the people saw and fell on their faces and said, Yahweh, he is Elohim. Yahweh, he is Elohim. Wow, what a sight that must have been, huh? What a sight to see that, the fire coming from heaven and everything. And then what happens right after that? Right after that, Jezebel's told what happens. She's coming after him. And he goes running away. Let's go to the next chapter. 1 Kings 19 and verse 13. We'll pick it up from when he's running to Mount Sinai. And here it is at the very time when the people needed him the most, because now they turned from Baal and they said, Yahweh is Elohim. Now they said, Eliyahu, teach us. Teach us. And he goes running away. He goes running away. And it happened, verse 13 of 1 Kings 19. When Eliyahu heard, he wrapped his face of his robe and went out and stood at the cave opening. And behold, a voice came to him and it said, what are you doing here, Eliyahu? Right? Didn't you just fight the priests of Baal? You got a job there. What on earth are you doing here? And he said, zealously, I have been zealous for Yahweh, Elohim of hosts, for the sons of Israel forsaking your covenant. They have thrown down your altars and they have slain your prophets by the sword. And I alone am left, and they seek to take my life. And Yahweh said to him, go, return on your way to the wilderness of Damascus, and you shall go in and anoint Hazael as king over Syria. So he said, okay, you want to know something, Eliyahu? You're going to play the pity party. You know, you're going to play the pity party. You're going to play the victim after you just saw the great miracle that I did there. And you're going to tell me that nobody is there left and this and that. I'm going to send you on one more assignment. First, go and anoint Hazael. And then you shall anoint Jehu, the son of Nishri, as king over Israel. Oh, and by the way, since you've lost your first love, since you lost your zeal, since you don't want to do your job anymore, go also anoint Elisha, the son of Shaphat, of Abel Manoah, as prophet in your place. And it shall be, he who escapes from the sword of Hazael, Jehu will kill, and he who escapes from the sword of Jehu, Elisha shall kill. And I have left in Israel 7,000, all the knees that have not bowed to Baal, and every mouth that has not kissed him. So you know what? Yahweh doesn't need our griping, he doesn't need our whining, and he doesn't need our murmuring and are complaining, because we know there's 144,000 out there, and I don't know where they all are. We're a tiny congregation. You know, our congregation probably doesn't have more than 30 or 40,000 people worldwide, right? So, but there's probably other groups just like that. And in the end, Yahweh will take the ones that are the real first fruits, the ones that are bearing the fruit, the ones that are working for him. Those are the ones that he's going to take as his first fruits in his 144,000. And however he's doing that, wherever these people are, whatever, that's his business. It's not mine. My business is to do the work that he's given me today. That's what my work is. So, wow. We got to get our priorities straight. You know, and like I said, whatever you focus on becomes most real to you. And I can guarantee you that if you're not reading your Bible every day, and you're not praying every day, and you're not meditating, you know, walking and meditating on Yahweh in your life, I can guarantee you that you're losing or lost your first love. And it shouldn't be a burden. You know, there's people that will read their Bible every day, but it's a burden. It's like a chore. Can you imagine? I look at these people through the ages that had no Bibles and that were martyred. I look at, there's a brother that we have that, I don't want to mention the country, but in a totally Islamic country where this person risked his life to take one psalm and hide it in his shoe going into that country. And if he's found, he'll be killed. He'll be put in prison, he'll be killed. And he risks his life for one psalm to have with him. And today, part of this restoration ministry is the Bible we have. That Yahweh has actually restored that Bible, the Hebraic Roots Bible, for us. And here it is, we have an original Bible, we have the study notes, we have the name of Yahweh in it. And we all of us have a Bible to read, whether that's a copy in our hand that most of us have, or if not, at least that you could download it, you know, and have it downloaded. But at the end of the day, we should be so thankful that we have a Bible to read. It shouldn't be a chore. It shouldn't be a chore. And we know every day, we can't read the Bible every day for 5, 6, 7 hours. You know, it just doesn't work out. But we should want to. That should be our goal. That should be our gift if we're able to do it. So the answer is we got to get our priorities straight. You have to force yourself and get your priorities straight. You got to get your life in order. You got to get your life disciplined. You got to do it in with your body. You got to do it with the food you're eating. You got to do it with your spiritual exercises. But you got to do it. You got to push yourself to do it. 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 16. 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 16. Says, rejoice always, right? We should always be praising and rejoicing. Pray without ceasing. In everything, give thanks, for this is the will of Yahweh and Messiah Yeshua toward you. Do not quench the spirit. See, when you're not doing this, when you're not praying without ceasing, when you're not reading your Bible daily, when you're not rejoicing before Yahweh and praising Him all the time, you're quenching His spirit. So of course, if you quench His spirit, you're going to lose your first love. It's not just going to be there from nowhere. You know, it's something you have to work on. It's something that you have to work on in your life. Let's go to Psalm 119. Psalm 119. And look at the words of King David. Look at the words of King David. How much King David loved the word of Yahweh. I'm going to start in verse 9. He says, by what shall a young man purify his path? To keep it according to your word. I have sought you with my whole heart. Do not let me wander from your commandments. I have hidden your word in my heart that I might not sin against you. Blessed are you, O Yahweh. Teach me your statutes. I have declared all the judgments of your mouth with my lips. I have rejoiced in the way of your testimonies over all the riches. I will meditate in your precepts, and I will regard your paths. I will delight myself in your statutes. I will not forget your word. Drop down to verse 105 and 106. Your word is a lamp to my feet and a light to my path. I have sworn I will rise to it to keep your righteous judgments. Drop down to verse 145. I cried with my whole heart, O Yahweh, answer me. I will keep your statutes. I cried to you, save me. I will keep your testimonies. I go before the dawn of day and cry, I hope in your word. My eyes go before the night watches to meditate on your word. Wow. So here's David. Look at the emotion he has. How he's crying out to Yahweh. How he has the joy that he has to Yahweh. And he's the king. He's the king of the nation. And he's doing these things. Go to 2 Samuel 6 and verse 14. Look at the love that Yahweh had. That David had for Yahweh. Look at the love that David had. 2 Samuel 14. 6 and verse 14. 2 Samuel 6 and verse 14. This is when they're bringing up the Ark of the Covenant, remember? And what happens? And David was dancing with all his might before Yahweh. And David was girded with a linen ephod, right? What is the white linen? It's the righteousness of the saints. And David and all the house of Israel were bringing up the ark of Yahweh with shouting and with the sound of a ram's horn. And it happened when the ark of Yahweh had come to the city of David And Michal, the daughter of Saul, looked through the window and saw King David leaping and dancing before Yahweh. She despised him in her heart. So that's another thing that's pretty interesting, that when people lose their first love and they lose the zeal of Yahweh, they usually get bitter against those who don't. And you'll see that. That's why you'll see many times with leadership, you know, like people will come in the congregation and they'll have no problem with judicial order leadership, but then they'll get in trouble in their life. Sometimes they're living in a sin or they're just falling away. You know, the parable of the thorns and the seed and the falling in the thorns and thistles, and they're falling away. But once they're doing it, whether it's guilt or whether it's just the worldliness, when they see the people of Yahweh that aren't doing that, they get bitter, they get angry, they get judgmental. They start to murmur and complain, and they start to falsely accuse, as we see here what happened with King David. We have to make sure we're loving the word of Yahweh. 2 Timothy 2 and verse 15. 2 Timothy 2 and verse 15 says, "And study to present yourself approved to Yahweh, a workman unashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth." How on earth can you have the love of Yahweh, and how can you have the zeal of Yahweh if you're not reading his word? That's the way. You know, how, like it talks about in Romans 10, how do you build faith? You build faith by reading the word of Yahweh. Because whatever you focus on becomes most real, and the more you're reading, the more reality it's coming to you, and the more it's on your mind. And that's the way you're going to build faith, by doing that. So we have to make sure we study the word daily to keep our focus on the Torah and not on the world. Romans 12, 1 and 2. Romans 12, 1 and 2, it says, "Therefore, brethren, I call on you through the compassions of Yahweh to present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, set apart, right, pleasing to Yahweh, which is your reasonable service. And be not conformed to this age, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, in order to prove by you what is the good and pleasing and perfect will of Yahweh." Be not transformed to this age, right? We see now in this age, we see that we're living in an age with artificial intelligence and all the things they're doing with injecting inside of people and doing with people now. We see that we're right at that point of the mark of the beast. And really what the mark of the beast is about taking over the mind of the people, you know, through all the things that Satan is doing in this world. So what we're to do is, we're not to be conformed to this age, but we're to be transformed through renewing of our mind. And that's what the Bible does. Every day when you're reading the Bible, every day when you're soaking this in, it's transforming your mind from the world into the mind of Messiah. And that's why it's extremely important that we have to do it. And like I said, we got to get our priorities straight. We got to get a focus on the work of Yahweh. And again, how involved you are is how converted you are. It's that simple. Luke 12 and verse 21. We've been called for a purpose. We want to make sure that we're fulfilling that purpose. First of all, I mean, for the great sacrifice that Yeshua did. And I say this all the time, every year, I say, if everyone in the world was righteous and never sinned but you, the plan would be the same. That Yeshua came to this earth, he went through the things he did, he suffered the way he did, he went through humiliation and beating and martyrism for you. He did it for you, but not just for nothing. He did it so that he can live in you now. Eye for eye, tooth for tooth, life for life. And now he's given his life up for your life, and now he's living in you. And you have to you have to put Yahweh first in your life in order to show him the appreciation for that, you know? Or what's going to happen? Or you're going to lose your zeal, and you're going to quench Yahweh's spirit from there. Luke 12 and verse 21. "Is such as he who lays up treasures for himself and does not abound in Elohim. And he said to his disciples, 'Because of this I say to you, do not be anxious for your life, what you should eat, or your body, what you should put on. The life is more than food, and the body is more than clothing,'" right? But this is what happens. Once you lose your first love, right, and your relationship with Yahweh falters, you're going to start getting more physical again. You're going to start thinking again about physical things and food and money and how am I going to survive and all these other things that really you stopped doing when you got converted because you realized that Yahweh is going to care for you. But once you lose your first love, you start thinking of all these things again. And he says, look at the ravens. They do not sow nor reap, which there is no storehouse or barn, and Yahweh feeds them. How much rather you differ from birds. He says, and who of you being anxious is able to add one cubit to his stature? So being worried and being nervous about these things, all it does is bring more doubt in your life. And it certainly doesn't bring you happiness. It doesn't bring you security. It's only making you more unhappy. And it's right what Satan wants. And then he talks about the lilies of the field, right? How beautiful they look. And today they're here, tomorrow they're in the fire. And look what he says. How much rather you of little faith, verse 29, and you do not seek what you shall eat or what you shall drink, nor let your mind be disturbed by these things, right? Be doubtful by these. For all the nations of the world seek after these things, and your Father knows you need them. But seek first the kingdom of Yahweh, and all these things will be given to you anyway. Stop being afraid, little flock, because your Father was pleased to give you the kingdom. So, wow, this is what we have to see, that if you lose your relationship with Yahweh and you lose your first love, then it's a given that you're gonna get more prideful, you're gonna get more murmuring, but it's also a given that you're gonna get more worried about worldly things, and it's a bad way in your life. It's not gonna help you to be happy, it's only gonna help you to be more unhappy. 2 Corinthians 9 in verse 1. He says, for indeed concerning the ministry to the saints, it is beyond measure for me to write to you. For I know your eagerness, of which I boast to Macedonia on your behalf, that Achaia has made ready from last year, and your zeal has stirred up a great many people. But I sent the brothers that our boasting, which is on your behalf, should not be in vain in this respect, that as I said, you were ready, right? So what happens? Their zeal stirred up many people. When you have your first love, you're automatically going to have zeal. Because when you have that emotion, when you're just so excited about Yahweh and excited about his kingdom and excited about everything he's doing in the world today and what's the world tomorrow going to be like, then what goes with that is zeal. You're going to have so much zeal and you're going to have so much happiness. Because if there's one thing I want in life, it's zeal. Because zeal is motivation. That's what it is. You know, zeal is the motivation to want to do something in a good way. So zeal is what we want. That's what he was saying. These brethren here, they had the zeal. 1 Corinthians 14 and verse 12. Look what he says. So also you, since you are zealots of spiritual things, seek to build up the congregation that you may abound. So Paul is telling the zealots to build up the congregation because that's what it is. Zeal is what's going to get you through these things. And I know when things come up, when challenges come up in our life, and particularly when it's dealing with sickness and maybe even death, it can be cold water in our faces and we do have to deal with it. But we can't let it take our zeal away. You know, there's a time for everything. There's a time to be born and there's a time to die. There's a time to laugh and there's a time to cry. And you have to keep perspective in your life. You can't hide it. And I say this, emotions are trigger points. So when things come like death, you can't try to say, oh, I'm strong, I'm not going to cry. No, let it cry. Let it come out. There's a time for it. But then you mourn and you get over it. Even in the Bible, we see 30 days of mourning. And then you got to move on. You can't let anything come between you and your relationship with Yahweh and Yeshua. Zeal helps us to keep focused. It helps us to keep humble, serving and unswerving in the congregation. Lack of zeal leads to pride, heresy, doubt, indifference, and self-focus. So we want to make sure we keep that zeal. And it's normal that with having your first love to Yahweh and Yeshua that you're going to have zeal. Like I said, it's normal. And it's normal that you're going to lose your zeal if you lose your first love. And I don't think anybody gave a better example than zeal than Yeshua. Look at the zeal he had for Yahweh. Go to the book of John, chapter 2 and verse 13. Chapter 2 and verse 13. And says, "And the Passover of the Jews was near, and Yeshua went up to Jerusalem. And he found those selling oxen and sheep and doves in the sanctuary, and the money changers sitting. And making a whip out of ropes, he threw out all the sanctuary, both the sheep and the oxen and the money changers, pouring out the money and overturning the tables. And to the one selling the doves, he said, 'Take these things from here. Do not make my father's house a house of merchandise.' And his disciples remembered that it was written, 'The zeal of your house has consumed me.'" Then the Jews answered and said, I'll stop there. "The zeal of your house has consumed me." So, wow, look at the zeal that Yeshua had. And, you know, the Christians, they just always want to talk about baby Jesus and the, you know, and the little manger and all this stuff. But they don't want to look at, yes, Yeshua was loving, caring, merciful. And he had more mercy than anybody. Like he said, he's looking for mercy, not sacrifice, but he also had zeal. He had zeal for Yahweh. And like he said, don't make the house of Yahweh a house of merchandise. And I would have loved to have been there and seen this, because everything he did, whatever you do, do with all your might. And he did it with zeal. And Yahweh has zeal also. Ezekiel 5 and verse 12 and 13. Ezekiel 5 and verse 12 and 13. Because you're going to see the zeal of Yahweh when he comes back with his wrath and his anger. Because zeal could be in a positive way. And zeal, it's always positive, but even when you're fighting like a general that's going out in an army, he better have zeal if he wants to win that battle. But Ezekiel 5 and verse 12 says, "A third part of you will die by the plague and shall be consumed by the famine in your midst. And a third part will fall by the sword all around you. And a third part I will scatter into every wind, and I will draw out a sword after them. And my anger shall be spent, and I will make my fury rest on them, and I will be at ease. And they shall know that I, Yahweh, have spoken in my zeal and my fulfilling my fury against them." So Yahweh is a Yahweh of a zealous Elohim, right? And in the end time, he's going to be zealous to get rid of sin in this world. So, in closing up here in the last few minutes, everybody gets to points in their life where they get discouraged. You know, even Yeshua, look in the Garden of Gethsemane, you know, where he was saying to the Father, "If there's any way, but not my will be done, but your will be done." The key is that if you build character in your life, and if you build discipline in your life, and if you were, it's just like when you're exercising. You know, if you've exercised for 10 years and then something happens and you can't exercise for a month, you don't lose everything that you did in 10 years over that 1 month that you don't exercise. It's the same thing here. Your spiritual exercises of praying, fasting, meditating, of disciplining your life, of staying close to Yahweh, you're not going to lose that in those few days or a week or two that something may come in your life that really pulls you away. But if you don't have that, if you don't have that discipline in your life, and you're not focused in your life, and you're not praying and studying every day, wow, that could be spiritual suicide when the baptism of fire comes and one of these challenges come in your life. But what we have to do is, you know, it talks about in Isaiah, go back to the rock where you've been formed from. And sometimes when you're going through a hard time, you got to go back to the beginnings, and you have to think about when you were first called, and you have to think about that time when you felt joy and you felt excitement and you felt zeal and all those wonderful things. Think of your first time, maybe if you ever came to Israel, and how you felt when you were there. Think of your first time at your baptism, of how you felt after the baptism. And these are things that will spark your mind, that will get you back to the place you need to be. But you have to do something. Hebrews 10 and verse 30, look what it says. Hebrews 10 and verse 30. He says, "For we know him who has said, 'Vengeance belongs to me, I will repay,' says Yahweh. And again, Yahweh will judge his people. It is a fearful thing to fall into the hand of the living Elohim. Therefore, remember the former days, those in which after you received baptism, you endured much tribulation. Indeed, being exposed both to trouble and reproach, You became an object of ridicule, and you have become companions of those men who have endured these things. For also you had pity on those in prison, and you accepted the seizure of your possessions with joy, knowing yourself to have a better and abiding possession in heaven, right? So at that time when you were coming into the truth and you realized that this life is only for 60, 70, 80 years at best, but the kingdom of Yahweh is forever. It's forever, billions and zillions and trillions of years. There's no time in the kingdom, but you're there forever. And you are willing to risk and sacrifice and give up everything for that pearl of great price. He says, then do not throw away your confidence, which has great reward. For you have need of patience, that having done the will of Elohim, you may obtain the promise, right? That's why you build patience over time. For the time is very short, and he who will come and will not delay. But the righteous shall live by faith. Yet if he draws back, my soul is not pleased in him. But we do not belong to those drawing back, which leads to perdition, but to the faith which restores the soul. So that's what it's about. It's about going back and thinking about when we first came into the truth, going back to that time, thinking about how we felt, meditating on it, you know, standing like we did when we were strong in the faith and doing all the things that we need to do. And the last scripture is Hebrews 6 in verse 4. Because the reality is, if you're losing your first love and you don't do something to get back, you could wind up losing it for good. Hebrews 6 in verse 4 says, for it is impossible for those who have descended to immersion and having tasted the heavenly gift and becoming sharers of the Holy Spirit and tasting the good word of Elohim and the works of power of the world to come, and having fallen away, it is impossible for them again to renew to repentance, for they crucify the Son of Yahweh a second time and put him to open shame. For the earth that drinks in the rain, which comes often upon it, and produces herbs that are useful for those who have it cultivated, receives blessing from Elohim. But if it should bear thorns and thistles, it is rejected and near a curse, and in the end will be burned up. But in regard to you, my brethren, we are persuaded better things and things pertaining to life, even though we speak in this manner. For Elohim is not unjust to forget your work and the labor of love which you showed to his name, ministering to the saints, and now are ministering. But we desire each of you to show the same eagerness to the full assurance of the hope to the end, that you not become slothful, but imitators of those who through faith and long-suffering are inheriting the promises. So that's what it's about. Pray to Yahweh. Ask him to intervene. Ask him to help you. But you have to do something. You have to think about that time when you came into the truth. You have to go back to the rock that you came out of. Remember the parable of the sower and the seed. The ones who fell away were the ones who had no relationship with Yahweh. They had no deep roots. The way you get deep roots is by doing something over and over and over again. Go back. Make your study life secure. Make your prayer life secure. Get back the zeal that you once had. And make sure you have that first love. Because once you have that first love, you never want to lose it. Yahweh bless. Shabbat shalom.